Welcome to Threshold for Transformation, or an introduction to it anyways. Today I'm going to introduce you to what I like to call a CAI. No, I didn't get the initials wrong. A CAI is a crazy ass idea. And it's one that I had many years ago, quite by accident. I was working with a student. We had finished a hands-on lesson. And I guess one of the ways I know that I'm a teacher is that I feel kind of like biologically programmed to give students homework. You know, learning is defined, learning isn't just what happens in a lesson. Learning is if you can find it again later. You know, so we don't want learning to be like a vacation in Las Vegas. What happens in the lesson on the table or on the floor stays there. We want people to take it with them. And so one thing that I often do is give people something to do based on the lesson. And I thought with this person, how can I do that? They were traveling. They were always somewhere different, not unlike some of us. And I thought, well, what's everywhere that you go, right? Well, one thing that's everywhere we go is the floor. But the other thing is a door. So how could I use a doorway as a constraint, right? As a kind of a jungle gym for doing Feldenkrais. So rather than tell you about it, I thought I'd invite you to do that with me. So I hope you have a doorway. Let me get rid of my chair. So here, come and join me in the doorway. Can you hear me okay there? Yes? Yes? No? Can you hear me? Yes? Thank you. I saw that, Kaya. All right. Sign language for yes. Okay. So would you stand with your forefoot in front of the door and your heel inside the door frame? And then, let's see, let me tilt this up just a little bit. There we go. And then the idea is to fit. Oh, wait, before you do that, just stand here comfortably. Right? So you have the front of your foot kind of in the room, and your heels in the door frame, just so we're all in the same place. Let your arms hang. Look straight ahead, and then comfortably turn and look to one side you choose. Look to that side, come back, and do that a few times. I'll ask you to be curious about how the movement begins. We're kind of compulsive, maybe unconsciously so, to ask, how far can I go? How fast can I get there? Go slow. Just ask yourself, what's the beginning like? What did you move? Notice before you start how you're standing. Are you more on your right foot or your left foot? Is your weight even? When you turn and look, did you turn your shoulders or just your head? Here, keep your shoulders in the frame of the door and just turn your head and see how easy that is. Now, when you come back, bring your head back. See if you can just bring your head back. Are your shoulders still turned? Did you turn them without thinking about them? So just find out, can you separate your head from your shoulders? And then can you let your shoulders and your chest move with your head? All right, let's do that to the other side. Would you look to your other side? Notice if you shift your weight on your feet. Notice if your chest moves, if your head moves, and if your pelvis moves. It's not so complicated. There's three balls involved, your head ball, your chest, and your pelvis. Good. Now, do you have an idea of which side is easier? I don't necessarily mean which side you go further, but which side is it easier? And in particular, and this might be hard to notice if you're going fast, because if you speed out the driveway, you're going to miss this. Which side is it easier to begin on? So try that. You could, you know, it's better to do one side a few times and then the other side a few times. Because often if you go side to side, it's like making a smoothie or a milkshake. The difference disappears. All right. Okay. Now you have some idea of where you started. Would you please find a way to put your arms inside the door frame? Right, so that your forearms are going to be against the frame. And you'll have to determine how high up you put your elbows so you get that feeling. That was the other title for this course, Framed, but I didn't think it was so good. Anyway, you're framed. And now, slowly, just move your pelvis to one side. Doesn't matter which way it is. So you're going to shift your pelvis a little bit towards the door frame. So, you know, if you go from side to side, that's shish kaboom. So you're just going to one side, so it's just shish. Not shish kaboom, not shish kabob, just shish. Just go to one side a little bit and come back. That's it. And notice when you do this, what you feel. So you when you shift your weight to that side, the side you're shifting to, does that foot get heavier or lighter? Okay, that's all. And now go the other way a few times. Notice when you do that, where do you feel the movement happening? Is the foot you're moving to getting lighter or heavier? Notice if you hold your breath when you do that. All right, so you just shift to that side a few times. And now shift to both sides, not at the same time, but alternately. Right? The idea is not to touch the door. You don't have to get anywhere near it. Just shift so that most of your weight is on one leg. Okay, so not, you don't have to go way over to the side, just so you're standing on one leg and then you're standing on the other, not on the outside of the foot, but on the whole foot. Good, put your arms down. Come back and now just turn your head and notice, did that get easier? And there's two questions. Do you go further? Did the beginning get easier? Because look, if the beginning doesn't change, you're going to end up in the same place, right? It's really at the beginning, you have a choice about what's going to happen. All right, let's do one other thing. Come back to being framed. Find somewhere comfortable. So you don't have to jam yourself into the door just so that the pressure of the door holds your arms there. And now turn and face like part of the way towards the door. So you're gonna just turn your pelvis, right? So here, your pelvis is gonna shift towards the door, but your arms are gonna stay in the frame, which means your feet will have to move, right? So you're gonna turn your feet. So instead of pointing forward, it'll point exactly to the door, like halfway to the door. So now your pelvis is askant, right? And now in this position, shift your pelvis to one side. Yes, slowly, easily. Shift just so you could take the foot that you're shifting away from off the floor. Just so you could take the the foot you're shifting from off the floor, but no further. And then come back really slowly so you can feel the weight shifting from one foot to the other. So it's not just about getting to the end of the movement, but it's about just exploring that, just in that direction. Come back to the middle and now shift the other way. You know, there's all kinds of jokes that are possible here. You become a shifty character. You know, it's like everybody else says, shift happens. You take your pick. So now just shift to the other side. Just the other side. Go slower. I mean, not ridiculously slow, but just a little slower than you tend. It'd be like moving from, I don't know, San Francisco, well, you know, Los Angeles to San Francisco, or San Francisco to Hawaii, maybe Kauai, not Honolulu, right? Where things are just a little bit slower, there's no rush. Take your time. And now that you've tasted one side and the other, would you slowly shift from side to side? So that you're fully on one foot or as fully as is comfortable. And on the whole foot, not on the outside of it. So you could lift the other foot, you don't have to. So just shift back and forth really slowly. And notice what's happening. Your shoulders are stuck. They're stuck with your arms and the door frame. Because you're twisted, when you shift, you're shifting and twisting somewhere. Not just in your lower back, but your ribs are moving. Your breastbone is moving. Something is happening between your shoulders. Can you feel it? Come back to the middle. And now, just stand for a moment. How do you feel in standing? And I would like you to make a guess. Don't move yet, but can you guess which way you're going to turn more easily? To the right or to the left or both after you did this funny movement just to one side? And after you've guessed, would you find out? Just test for yourself. Good. And then please come back. Let's try something a little different. Come back to the same position again. And now, would you walk your feet back to where they were, but do it in little steps. So take, I don't know, 4 or 5 little steps to turn your feet to the same direction they were turning. And then take 5 or 6 really little steps to come back to facing forward. All right, so your left foot turns a little bit to the right or the left, and then the right foot turns a little bit in that direction, and then the other foot, and you just keep switching from foot to foot, and just slowly twist your pelvis towards one side or the other, but just the same side a few times and come back. Teeny little steps. And now do the same thing turning the other way. So you're gonna turn 45 degrees, like not all the way to the door frame, but halfway. Whatever's comfortable for you, a quarter is fine, an eighth. And just in little steps, turn your pelvis from side to side. Keep yourself stuck in the door frame, right? Really little steps. If you can go a little further, that's fine. But you're just, that's it. Your head stays forward, your shoulders stay forward. And now keep yourself twisted in whatever direction you're twisted, right? Just end up with your pelvis turned a little bit to one side. And now turn your head to that same side, whichever it is. just turn your head to that same side. And now when you bring your pelvis back to the front and then to the other side, turn your head with it. So your head and your pelvis are going to turn together. Your pelvis in little steps, your head turning smoothly. Go slowly so you don't get confused. But you turn your pelvis and your head together. Now, once you've had enough of that, you could turn your head the opposite direction than your pelvis is going. And then keep turning the head and pelvis opposite. Can you do that? So your pelvis is turning one way, your feet are walking, your head's looking the other way. And your shoulders, your rib cage, the top of your chest is stuck in the middle. It wants to have nothing to do with it. It can help if your eyes go with your head. So you look in one direction and your pelvis looks in the other. It's kind of silly. It's good. Put your arms down. And now just turn your head one way and see, is that easier? Does it begin easier? Do you go further? Turn your head in the other way. I didn't even do the lesson. I just talked you through the rest of it, and my turning really changed. Did yours? All right. Why don't you come back? Well, I think we'll stop there. It's kind of like the free sample at the farmer's market. Or it's an hors d'oeuvre, not a meal. A lesson is more of a meal. But I wanted to give you enough of a taste of this idea. This is the notion of the class. So in the series of lessons, we're going to do things standing. We're going to do things sitting. We're going to use the door frame other than to hold our arms, but you'll have to come back to see that. We're going to work with breathing. Then the idea with the door frame is it's something you can play with at any time. And that, in the course of the class, I'm going to make some suggestions about ways that you can use the door frame when you're not in class. Some way you can take the movements that we did and not so much practice them, like practice doing it the right way, but more like using this as a framework for an experiment, for being able to make differences in how you move so that you take the lesson with you. Wow, I forgot to shut off my phone. I'm sorry. I just did it. Would you please put your phones on stun or off, whichever you prefer? Oh, so look, I've been talking. I'm curious what you have to say about what you just did.
Very nice. Thank you.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you very, very much.
Thanks for coming. Well, I know some of you have to leave. That's fine. At least you got the most important part. If you've got questions about what we did or about what the class is, I'm here to answer them. If you've got snide remarks or, that's cool too. Professor Rubenstein, yes. You're unmuted.
Okay, when you said snide remarks, I thought, no. Actually, it was really nice and I got some big changes, but you could probably see my doors must be pretty wide. It wasn't, I couldn't hold my arms up well because I wasn't snug in there. I was working hard to hold my arms up. I'll try to find a different doorway, but I think all my doorways are wide. But amazingly, even though I kept stopping, I did have a big change, and I just like that idea of the head and the pelvis and the chest not going. It was really lovely. I liked it a lot. I'm really looking forward to it.
Cool. Well, look, here's a way to cheat. Get this very expensive device, which I will sell you for, $2,000 or $3,000.
$399.
And just put it between your elbow and the door.
I thought about that.
The other thing that will work is if you have a roller that's tall enough, you can put it there. Well, that might be too round. It might be too rolly. But
I'll play.
If you want to, you could also get a really big rubber band and rubber band the pillow to your arm, and then you don't have to hold it up.
Cut off my circulation.
Well, I mean, you know, a big wide thing. You could sew it, you know, with your sewing machine. Sorry.
Are you crazy?
Yeah, I know you. I was
As I'm sewing my mask. As I'm sewing my masks. Okay.
Yeah, there you go.
Got it. Thank you.
Yeah.
I have two questions.
Sure, Dan.
Would you ever do this lesson just with one arm on it? Because I have like handicapped doorways and they're really wide for people. Could you do it without your elbow on it?
Technically speaking, what you're looking for here is that with this here, it makes it unlikely that your chest, that this part of your chest is going to move. So I guess you could do this. Would that work?
I bet you my people won't like their elbows like that very long.
Well,
That's a good thought. Have it that wide.
You know, I mean, that would be, you could find a way, but the point being that you're using the door as a way of holding your the top. So, you know, we'll play the Feldenkrais theme song. Your arm bone's connected to your shoulder bone. Your shoulder bone's connected to your collarbone. Your collarbone's connected to your breastbone. That's connected to your upper rib bones, which is connected to the top of your spine bones, right? So what you're doing is you are fixing. Now, you know, it depends on which of the subgroups of the Feldenkrais method you belong to. Do you go to the Church of C7 or the Temple of T1? Well, either way, you are fixing the very top of your chest.
Yeah.
And you're moving everything around it. And it's so I would say that the test would be, is it easier to fix your chest? Fix not in repair, but in, you know, keep still easily. Well, so I think that would be it. Let's try it and find out. Try it and let me know.
Yeah. I was imagining one arm like this, and the other arm like that. And just
that's a really hell of a wide door, but I guess that would work.
It's like the handicap doors, you know, the handicap, they have to fit a wheelchair in there and stuff, but you can always have them going like that, away from this arm. Anyway, I'm just wondering if you ran into that before.
Well, you know what? They can put their hands on the door on either side on the wall.
Right.
And their elbow to the door frame, and that would work.
Right.
You know, whatever, you know, at whatever height, their arms could be like this and they could just have their hands on the wall.
Right. Okay.
Ooh, good. Thanks for, I'm glad you asked.
I tried signing up for your classes.
Yes.
I was unsuccessful because I kept getting to that red bar and I press it to go into something and then boom, it would just like.
You nothing. Need to have an account, Dan. It says sign into your account.
Oh.
And if you don't have an account, it says sign up for one. So you can sign up for one. They're free.
All right. Is there,
and if you sign up for a Become a Better Teacher account, you can sign up for the advanced training that goes with it. It's free. You get like 300, almost 400 transcripts from the Strasbourg training. Yes. And you get other free lessons. And you get like all the AY lessons I teach on the AY A Day group. I record the discussions that we have afterwards. So you get that too. So it's a free account, and on any account you get access to the lesson locator, which is the the digital card catalog for the Alexandria Nye lessons and other lessons.
Right.
So that's what it's there for. And the reason we do that is because we offer stuff just for Feldenkrais teachers. So it's kind of like that way you're pre-qualified. And the reason we ask people to have accounts is it saves us a lot of source with, you know, people creating fake accounts. I mean, we're building in a community. So the idea is to, you know, include people in that way. It makes it too much of a hassle for some people, but I guess those aren't the people I'm interested in.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
I forgot my password, actually.
Well, on the page where you sign in, it says forgot password.
I know. It's waiting in my email, and I left work before I got to it. So.
All right. And if it doesn't work, you write an email to support@mindinmotion-online.com, and somebody will help you. Because I'm probably teaching a class, and I can't do it.
I was hoping that it wasn't going to be full before I got there.
If it is, I'll make sure you have a place, Dan. I haven't seen you in years. It's great to see you, man.
I love it.
You know the boss, right?
Who is the boss? Yeah, you the boss. Okay, right.
Just here. I said that to a friend of mine in Italy, and she said today, and she said, "Do you know what that means here?" And I said, "Yes, that's why I said it."
What does it mean? Tell me later. Write it.
Yeah, watch The Godfather. Sorry, that's not to say that what life in Italy is like that. All right. If you have other comments or questions, please say something. If not, I can fill the space, but I'd rather hear you. Yes, June, please.
I missed the setup at the beginning. What did you do with your feet if you had a threshold? How did you handle that?
I said put your forefoot in front of the threshold and your heels between the doorframe.
Okay, so I'm in the house and we've got pretty mega high thresholds. So it's like being in a...
high heels?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, maybe for the class you get a board, like a 2x4, and you put it in front of your threshold.
Okay.
Or just a hard pad from your Feldenkrais room.
Okay.
Hi, cool. Fanny.
Hi.
All right.
So I have a question about the class,
yes, ma'am,
the series. You said in there, if you have room, if we can't go to one time, maybe we can do another time. Will that be something that even if you've got 24 in each, that maybe one of the days is going to be the day Ashlyn's giving birth? I will have to be.
Well, I think, you know,
I might not be able to.
I don't
do
know.
It.
I think we'll vote on whether that's a good excuse or not. Like,
yeah, never mind. Because I won't be able to do it that day anyway. I don't know what I'm thinking. Don't mind me.
Well, you get the recordings.
Yeah.
I know. And the thing is, I want people to sign up at a specific time, and I don't want half the class changing their mind. I don't think that's going to happen.
Okay. That was my only concern.
But come on, you know the boss.
It's who's the boss?
You know, rules are there so we can make exceptions. But, you know, Larry loves limits.
Larry loves limits.
He does. I do.
Larry?
Yeah, Jerry.
Yeah, I got offline. My things aren't the best here in Hawaii as far as the internet. I'm curious, how many classes are there, and how much is the cost?
There are 8 classes, and I don't know how much it is, Jerry. I don't know. I think it's at 167 and 127, I think. Does that sound right? I don't know.
157, I think, and 127.
157 and 127, something like that. So I made a third of the classes available at a lower price because I know not everybody has money. So it's kind of distributed in that way.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a add-on class, which I think that one is 187 and 137, which is a advanced training, which meets once at the end of every week to kind of review the lessons and talk about the structure. And how, you know, what the idea behind the lesson is, and how to use it with different people. And, you know, that's just so there's kind of behind the scenes group for teachers and trainees who are interested in talking about it from the that perspective.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks.
That wasn't clear to me. I didn't see where to sign up for the...
Well, you have to sign up for one, and then you get asked if you want to sign up for the other. So if you didn't get asked, then you're one of those people who went through at the beginning, Beth, and there was a problem, and you should be getting an email probably as soon as I write it, which will be after this is done, because it was like, it was a snafu sandwich today.
Okay, because I didn't get it. I mean, I didn't see it.
Yeah, you're special.
And are most
a blessing. I'm blessed.
Are most of the lessons going to be in the doorway kind of thing?
They're all in the doorway, but they're sitting and standing, and there are different ways of using the doorway. Okay. Not just that way.
I understand.
Not just the modified Easter position, but other ones as well. Kaya, were you going to ask something? Well, here, let me see. Can I don't know if I can... Oh, there you go. You did it.
Yeah, no, I thought that was really fun and creative. And you would have to make accommodations for different different doorways and different people and different shoulder mobility. I mean, for me, it felt really just even this was, I don't know, it felt really good. But it definitely felt like maybe I would, if I was working with somebody who wasn't comfortable in that position, we'd have to work up to that position. So in the classes, it would be nice to have some alternatives, like, you know, different arm orientations to the frame. But I liked it a lot. And I felt really quick change, like the 3-minute miracle kind of thing. What is it? Nancy calls them party tricks, or maybe somebody calls them party tricks, but.
Yeah, I mean, I think 3-minute miracle is Mark Reese's term. I think 5 minutes is a little better usually, but, you know, I think, you know, you're right. And, you know, of course, I'd be curious in your adaptations. I mean, you're the OT here. Come on. So you can think of some ways of adapting it. Yeah. No, you're right. I mean, that's what I was, you know, that was Dan's question about an extra wide doorway.
Right.
And, so, you know, this would work, like, if I'm in the hall facing into the room. If I was into the room and the door's at the end, you'd have to use the wall on one side, you know, you'd have to be, like, against the wall on one side and your arm long behind the door on the other.
Right.
Which would put you in the front and in the back of the room on the outside. I don't know. I think it's better to be in the hallway facing in. And have some expanse on either side, because then you could put your arms straight. And that will work. And that was, you know, what I suggested to Dan. The first lesson we're going to do is in sitting, because I think standing in that position can also be difficult for people. So I want to lead up to it. It's kind of like in the roller series. The first lesson is done not lying on the roller, but standing with the roller behind you against the wall. So the idea is to kind of enter the domain of the tool slowly. I mean, with the floor, it's not so difficult for most people. But here, you know, we're going to do some stuff in sitting. And in sitting, you can use the door frame and the chair. So there's some interesting ways of playing with that. But the whole idea is, there's lots of ways in Feldenkrais where this is my favorite example, where we use the body's relationship to itself to get rid of some movements so that movement happens somewhere else, right? So rather than trying to move, you know, Feldenkrais, as you've heard me say, you personally, have heard me say, is benevolently devious, right? Rather than directly saying to someone, hey, bub, move here because you're not. You know, part of our methodology is to take away the choices that people normally use so they can discover something else. Like if we were a state and we had the state animal, it would be the beaver. Because we build dams, so the movement has to go around it. So it, the lesson is using the door as that's what I meant by a jungle gym, or a piece of exercise equipment that builds these dams that we can then move around. And the idea is to familiarize yourself with the movement so that they can become playful. And not, you know, the thing about Feldenkrais is it's not prescriptive. We don't say, do this movement and it will fix that. We don't say, do it 17 times as if that's the magic number. You know, the idea is by exploring how you move, discovering kind of, you know, the road not taken, the choices you don't take. So in the description of the course, I talk about how this is about increasing your movement vocabulary and revealing your blind spots, uncovering them, because we don't notice where we don't move. But using these, using these dams, these constraints, introduces novel movement. And if we can keep the novelty up, then we can begin to wake up to how we're moving. Right? Because what happens is we fall asleep and the, you know, that's the nature of learning. When you learn something well, it becomes automatic. When it becomes automatic, you stop noticing it. Right? That's the way we're built. What that means is we need a way to remind ourselves, you know, I'm a writer, so I would say we need a way to edit our movement. You can't move and edit at the same time. You can't write and edit at the same time either. So this is editing time, if you will. But it's also learning how to incorporate that into our daily lives. You know, that's what awareness is about, noticing what you're doing so you can do something about it. You know, and as Feldenkrais said, if you don't know what you're doing, you can't do what you want. And the fact is, we don't know what we're doing. And by we, I mean you and me. I mean, the sign of successful learning is it becomes automatic. So, I mean, what we need to do is keep learning. It's not such a bad thing. It's a lifelong project. And it's a lifelong project because our body keeps changing from the moment we're born, and not in like incremental ways, but, you know, even in childhood, if you watch babies on Netflix, you know, babies don't grow like the same amount every day. They have spurts. And, you know, when you get older, you have spurts in how your bones get bigger. And when you get older, it happens in these jumps. You know, and some of them are just the natural process of aging, and some of them are accidents or injuries or shocks, trauma of different kinds, and we adjust to them and we limit ourselves. And what limits us is not what happens to us so much as the adjustments that we make automatically, and then we forget them, and then we forget that we forgot them. So Feldenkrais is about remembering, literally putting the members back together again, waking up, however you want to talk about it. The fact is, it's not done because we keep learning, things become automatic, and what we need is a way to wake up the autopilot. And you know what? We have one. It's called the Feldenkrais method. You know, and you know, you said something really nice, thank you, Kaya, about this being creative and fun. I mean, that makes me really happy. It's a novel way of doing this, and I want to do it in such a way that it's not just simply instructive, but, you know, we learn to move with a certain kind of joy. And what we get from that joy, if you'll think back to an election cycle a little while ago, not so long ago, we get that feeling of, yes, we can. Yes, I can. It's that feeling of being able that comes from learning. And that's what these lessons are about. That's the gift of them. And I think that makes a really big difference in this time when we feel like we're out of control and where our own behavior, each of our behaviors, makes a difference in what happens to everyone around us, and our collective behaviors make a difference. It's like what we're doing, and we have a choice about that. So I think rekindling, and I don't mean that little device that you have books on, but rekindling our sense of being able to learn and our joy in learning. That's as important as what happens in any lesson, right? I mean, I think that that's the problem with reducing what we're doing to, just neuroplasticity is really great and it sounds wonderful, but I don't want to wear a white coat to work. This isn't clinical, it's educational. It's not therapy, it's about learning. It's about learning to be human and what that means and the potential that we have. And when we lose that, we reduce the method to something less than what it is. And I think we make it less interesting.
Hey, Lair.
Yeah.
What I like about this is, I'm actually living right now in the house in which I was born and grew up in. And so it's been a long time that I have used a door as something more than just a passageway from one room to the next. But to linger in a door, it's what I did as a child all the time. I was climbing in the door jams, in the door frames all the time. I was pressing up against the door. You'd hang out in the door. You'd climb on it. You'd do isometrics and press on it and then have your arms float up. It was just such an interesting playground.
Just getting some tea.
Oh, sure. And so to reacquaint myself in this house of my childhood with that option, that a capacity to use, there's a zillion doors around here, and to think that every one is an opportunity for me to use it as an artful constraint that I could discover something about myself is just a very different way of relating to this house.
And to a doorway, because like you said, doorways are things we pass through that we don't linger in. And we live in a society that has almost no patience for the place between places. Mm-hmm. People just want to get there. They want it. They don't take the time to reflect. They're on to the next thing already. Right? And they leave. In preparing for this class, I read all this research. I mean, there is research that shows that when you walk through a doorway, you forget what happened just before. Mm-hmm. Right? And so it's about a transition, but there's something to be said for awareness, which isn't, it's not just going somewhere, but it's noticing where you're going. It's hanging out in the moment between being here and getting there. And, if I wax poetic, because, I'm pretty concrete, but if I wax poetic, there's something special about that. Right? And being in that place where you're between here and there. And what I'm going to talk about in the four kind of end of the week reviews of the lessons is as a term of art, a learning logic of the lesson, like how, what about the different steps take you in a certain direction, the students, right? And from the teacher's perspective, like, what do you look for in the lesson? If you understand where the journey of the lesson is going as a direction, not a destination, then what clues do you have about the students doing it and where they get stuck along the way and how you would help them? And I mean, these lessons, these lessons, like most lessons, sometimes the inspiration is watching other people or doing an ATM lesson, one of these lessons on my own, and thinking, well, what if, but what the laboratory for me is taking these ideas. And, you know, when I was studying dance or pantomime or being a magician, I would practice. There was not just simply repetition, but, you know, there was exploration of ideas. That's where the creativity comes from. So, I mean, you could call it studio time or floor time or whatever, but I have taken, you know, this idea and, you know, it's kind of the proof is, does it apply with other people? And then can I use it myself? And so whenever that was, I don't know, 6 or 5 years ago, you know, when I had a messed up knee and 2 broken arms and I had surgery on one of them. And then this last November, when I had surgery on my neck and I have a third of my sternocleidomastoid, the interior third on my left side is no longer there. You know, and I had numbness, well, it's almost gone, but on the side of my face, the outside of my ear and the back of my head and the whole side of my neck on that side, I was just like weird, like waking up in somebody else's pajamas. And it was just strange. I could tell that there was a difference in my movement. And, you know, giving yourself a lesson is so hard to do because I know from my own experience and, you know, just reading like F. Matthias Alexander's books, you know, that you try to get out of your habit in your habitual way. Right? What do you mean I'm not raising my voice? You know, it's just you don't notice you're doing that shit. And so, like, the hard thing about giving yourself a lesson is how do you learn something about yourself? How do you discover your own blind spots? So there's some of these lessons that are, I mean, they really mean a lot to me because in doing them, and I mean, not just in these, but I was taking ideas from Moshe's lessons and, you know, unknowingly, because I didn't find this out until actually just a few months ago. I'm not the first person to do this. I now know that Ruthie has a whole bunch of lessons that she does like here, but, you know, that's so cool. That I find great joy in that because it just says, wow, there's some resonance here. But, you know, there's one lesson that I'm going to do with everybody where, like, for me, I discovered the difference dynamically in terms of how I was turning my head one way and the other. Now, there are certainly classic ATM lessons where I could learn that. And, like, I know in my own, like, journey from, like, you know, surgery and then treatment and all that and still happening, that, like, doing these lessons that as a group Feldenkrais teachers, you know, we meet at 8 in the morning and 6 in the evening California time, and for 2.5 years, and it started out with a handful of people and it was a couple of dozen people for the longest time, and since the incarceration, I mean, since, you know, living at home, I mean, the last time I taught a lesson, which was 2 weeks ago today, there was 177 people there, right? But I go there mostly as a peer, as a participant, and doing those lessons, I mean, I get up from those lessons, and I should have marked it on the calendar, right? That there were lessons where I would get up, and they weren't neck lessons or throat or mouth lessons, but I would get up, my movement had changed, how it felt, you know, how comfortable I felt in my skin. The numbness had, like, I could feel different parts. Like, one day, my ear came back. It was just immediately after the lesson, right? And it's happened enough times that that's not insignificant. It's not by accident. So this place is also a place I kind of explored those ideas. And look, I think I understand the ideas of lessons better when I say, how can I take that and bring it here? Right? Because, like, I didn't make up these ideas. You know, what Moshe created has taken me most of my life. I did my first ATM lesson when I was 19 years old. I'm 61. Most of my life, to figure out. And I think in the application, in the shifting it from one context to another and being true to the spirit of Moshe's method, or not, because, you know, when I'm not, people will tell me, hopefully my friends, but, you know, someone will tell me, you know, and I think doing that together, it makes clear what the method is. You know, Moshe kept developing the method. And I think our question, you know, my question, not alone, but together with my colleagues, you know, how do we keep developing it in the spirit of what he was doing? If we lose the spirit, then it's not the method anymore. And if we do what he did, well, we're not doing what he did because he kept changing what he was doing. He didn't repeat himself. You know, and I think if I was more of a, I don't know, if I was a better businessman, I would have taken one of these ideas, like the prayer lessons, where, you know, I taught a series of moving in the world of objects with a broom, a shoe, and a cup. And they were all ATMs using objects, you know, and that, you know, I could take any one of the series I've done and I would have just spent my whole life like marketing that and teaching other people how to teach it. But I'm interested in continuing to develop these ideas and to, you know, not everything works. I don't love all my creations equally. You know, the part of being a good writer is not loving your sentence. The part of being a good choreographer is killing most of what you create, because a lot of it's really bad, you know. And I mean, I don't bring that to what I'm teaching, hopefully, but I mean, not everything works, and or it works sometimes, and you can see with someone in the class it isn't working. And I think the mark of a good teacher is to learn from that moment. So anyway, I have no idea what the question was, but I hope the answer was good. Sorry.
Well, Larry, this what you're talking about you know, taking something and recontextualizing it, discovering it or translating it to a new context. There's a beautiful Milton Erickson quote. It says, a powerful mind is when you take learning from one situation and you translate it to another situation. And that's exciting. It's exciting to be in that process. So bravo for exercising your powerful mind.
I was thinking of Bateson, right, who gave the example of deduction and induction, right, as a kind of thinking. And then he talked about, instead of, you know, like going from the general to the specific or the specific to the general, going across from one context to another, which I don't know if he called it transduction. I can't remember what he called it, but that idea of going laterally, right? I'm still trying to figure out what the method is. I'm still learning from it, you know, and it's still making a difference for me. Like, I mean, I think we're here, those of us who are Feldenkrais teachers and those of us who are, well, let me put it another way. Those of us who practice the method who are Feldenkrais practitioners, and those of us who are teachers who are also practitioners, because if you're teaching it and not practicing it, you're in the wrong profession. We're here, I think, because of Moshe's promise, right? Which Moshe's promise to me was that we could learn to help ourselves. Right, that's the promise of the method. That's what I got. I don't know. I think no matter why we're here, we all share that idea of being our own authority, of being able to help ourselves. And that's for me the guiding light and creating a place where we can share that with each other too, where that, you know, like talking about the idea of the constraint within the lesson, not as a lecture, but as like helping the student understand what the tool is, so that they, the teaching tool, the pedagogical device, or whatever you want to call that, but so that they, that becomes something that they can appreciate about the lesson, not so that they understand, so that you understand, so that I remember that the limitation is not something to escape, to wiggle around, but it is my teacher, right? By respecting the limit, by respecting how the choice I would have taken has been closed off, and asking myself, what other ways do I have? That's what happens in the lesson, right? And so if the student can understand that, they can learn to appreciate, if not love, that limitation. It's not, you know, it's like there's that person who's dieting, who thinks that if no one sees them eating a piece of cake, it doesn't count. Or if they have a diet Pepsi after the piece of cake, it cancels it out, right? It doesn't work that way, right? And so here, understanding these kinds of limits, which are temporary, we're adding them onto our movement. You know, it's just one of the tools we have, but that way the student doesn't try to cheat it, because they cheat themselves. So I think there's something valuable in talking about that and making that clear. And here, you know, the frame gives us an opportunity to do that. And like I say, you know, my challenge to me is like, how do I get someone interested in doing this in such a way that it doesn't become a prescription? It doesn't become a set of exercises, but something that they're interested exploring. And that's also kind of like hanging out in the doorway, because people want to get to the end of the movement. They want to know what to do so they're done. And this is that, to the end of the movement. You know, it's like, why do we count in an exercise? So we know when we're finished. We want to get it over with. And this is about hanging out in that place and exploring. And it's something different. And I abhor, and some of you don't look at me, I just don't want to be in the position of being the parent of a teenage child where I'm telling them to do this for their own good, right? Because we all know that doesn't work. People have to want to do it for their good, not because I tell them. So, you know, how do I make this, the activity that we're engaging in, clearly different than what their expectations are, and worthwhile without becoming a school marm or a military drill sergeant or a guru? I don't know. I keep trying to ask myself that question, and I use, you know, these different situations as different ways of doing it. In the prayer lessons, you know, I'm talking about, you know, how prayer and Feldenkrais use movement to change consciousness. Right? Which is an interesting question. It's just a framework. And it was, I mean, the coolest thing about doing that series was, you know, I felt like all of a sudden people were coming out to me. Like they were saying, oh, I took this back to my, you know, my spiritual community. And there they know about Feldenkrais, and I brought it to them, but I don't talk about that in the Feldenkrais world. Because, you know, if you're not doing meditation, if you're, I don't know, if you're a practicing Roman Catholic or a Russian Orthodox person, I don't think most people talk about that here, right? So all these people were telling me about that. It was really cool. It was a whole, to me, it opened my eyes to this whole group of Feldenkrais, people taking the work from their Feldenkrais practice and connecting it to their spiritual practice. And there was a group of people that weren't trying to get away from a problem necessarily, you know, their pain or their limitation, but they're trying to build a better world for themselves or other and other people. So that was a really interesting conversation, right? And I don't know, I'm you know, thinking, well, I once said to, well, I've said many times in ATM classes, you know, that the floor is your friend. One of my students wrote a book about it. She just gave it to me a year ago. It's a book for a children's book for adults called The Floor is Your Friend. But this is about the door is your friend. You can have two friends. You don't have to have one. And it doesn't have to be an imaginary friend. It's a real friend. And it's there wherever you go. You don't have to take it with you. It will support you wherever you are, just like the floor. It will never tell your secrets. All right. Anyone want the last word or words?
In the room?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
You're kind of jumping. You want to try shutting your video off, and then we might get sure. Your audio sure. Clear.
Is that better?
That's much better.
Okay. First of all, thank you very much. It was great. And one insight that came to me was I had always thought of turning my neck. By the way, folks, chiropractor, so not trained in the Feldenkrais method. But I'd never thought of my neck turning with anything other than my paracetal muscles. And I noticed that every time we were several minutes in, I noticed that I was initiating the movement with the base of my tongue and my anterior muscles. So that was really helpful to me. And no. So I want to say thank you for that. That was great.
Cool. Well, that's the purpose of the device, right? If you take away some of the ways we move most predominantly, right? In the changes in development, the way that we think about development, when we've gone from, you know, this idea that there are these reflexes and then the nervous system is repressing them and then they reappear. So and we've gone from the idea that there's fixed motor programs like recipes to this idea which came out of dynamic systems theory, first kind of applied to developmental movement. The idea is instead of programming, we call it soft assembly. That the nervous system in a moment-to-moment way does the best job to put together whatever movement it wants to create, to initiate out of what it has. It's like cooking. You don't have pasta, so you use rice in the dish. It's kind of improvisational. So what's happening in these situations is like in all Feldenkrais learning, we are harnessing the natural processes of noticing and of learning, adapting and learning to the lesson. They're part of the lesson. So here we're closing off doorways, directions, we're creating dams so you can't go in that direction. And then through soft assembly, your nervous system at that moment puts together the best solution it has. And if you've closed the most common door, right, if you've always gone in and out of your house, no matter where you're going to, to work or to the grocery store or to a park or a picnic or a funeral, you go out the same door. If we close that door, if you lock it and you've lost the key, and you open a rusted door to the basement or you go through a window, but you find other ways of doing it. And what you're asking the nervous system to do is to find these other directions. I mean, what's happened in the way that we've learned and adapted is out of our vast array of possibilities, we've limited ourselves. We do that two times. We do that when we're learning, we make the system more limited. So we stiffen up first. We do that when we're injured. So we make the system simpler. We reduce the degrees of freedom. So the difficulty that we have, the ways that we get stuck, is that out of our repertoire of movement, we've reduced the options that we use. So the question is, how do we find the options we don't use, especially because once we've reduced the options, we forget that we forgot those options. We don't know how to find them again. It's like, you know, after you hurt yourself, you moved a different way before, That's like you're remembering it from the outside. You can't step into it. It's a lament, not a recall. Right? And so the question is, how do we free up those possibilities? And that's what the method is about. I mean, it's one of the things the method is about, but it's an educational approach. Because the problem isn't that we're broken. The problem is that we've learned a certain way of moving that makes us more limited, way more limited, usually, than we need to be. And, you know, a lot of times we call that aging. And on that note, maybe it's a, you know, it's a good place to stop. So thank you. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for jumping in the pool and giving it a go. And, you know, it's a modification of a famous line from Jerry Rubin's book, I think, in 1967. Steal this book. I mean, steal this lesson. I'll make up other ones. You know, take the ideas. It's not just mine. It's Ruthie's. And look, you know, no one can arrest you for stealing an idea, because if they take you to court, you still have that idea. Right? I mean, ideas aren't meant to be kept in your pocket. They're meant to be used. So, you know, the best thing you can do is make something of it. My friend Pat Siebert says, get in trouble and blame it on me. So, you know, take this idea and pretend you invented it. I don't really care, as long as it gets used, you have fun with it, and it proves to be helpful for somebody. All right. And, you know, and please, if you're interested, come and join me. I'll tell you later. Let's just say goodbye. I'm gonna shut the recording off. If you want to hang out for a few minutes after and talk, you're invited.